Hello, fellow Earth folks. I'm Annie Gigg, GYG, here on CFRU 93.3 FM and CFRU.ca, available wherever you are in the world. Warm welcome to Better Me, Better World, the show for growth-minded change makers, difference makers, and happiness makers. In our episodes so far, with a few digressions, we've been talking about the way of the BU journey, of becoming a you or you, becoming un-F-withable. I can't say the F word on air. You may recall that an un-F-withable describes that state when you're truly at peace and in touch with yourself, when nothing anyone says or does bothers you and no negativity or drama can touch you. I've talked about how it's actually an unattainable state because it demands perfection, and that, my friends, is not part of the human condition. However, it's the lifelong journeying towards that state, towards enlightenment and authenticity, that enables your life to become increasingly rewarding, fulfilling, purposeful, joyful, happyful, and holistically healthful. It's the journey towards an ever more abiding peace of mind. And perhaps the greatest beauty of it is, whether you're in the morning, afternoon, or evening of your life, the time is right. Right now, for you to begin the journey of self-awareness, liberation, and empowerment. As George Eliot said, it's never too late to be what you might have been. If you happened to listen in on the time warp conversations between my younger self at age 25 in 1980 and my more current self, you may have noticed that a number of times I reminded Annie Younger that your enlightening self-development journey can't be forced. You advance as you will at your own pace, according to your experiences, openness, and receptivity to change and growth. There are, however, circumstances that can suddenly catapult you ahead on your path, or, to mix metaphors, induce an intense personal growth spurt. I experienced such a circumstance, one that, as they say, you wouldn't wish on your worst enemy because of the pain. Pain in the form of fear and loss. Yet, I'm 10 out of 10 grateful that it happened because of how it enriched my life in the form of a broader life perspective, more robust personal boundaries, and a much expanded comfort zone. And this catapulting experience is the topic of today's episode. I'm introducing it by way of a story I wrote a short while after my experience as the primary caregiver to my daughter during her serious mental health crisis. Rereading the story for the purpose of incorporating it into this episode resulted in tears streaming down my cheeks as it revived painfully intense emotions. Throughout the story, I entwine the metaphor of me riding on a blimp, the Hindenburg, because that's exactly how I felt at the time. The story begins with my daughter having just left home to begin college. The title of the story is Touched. Prologue. The term hypnopomp refers to that state of nebulous consciousness between sleep and wakefulness, which usually occurs when you're pulled out of a deep sleep by something like a ringing phone. It's when your mind is awkwardly scrambling up out of illusion towards reality, trying to make sense of where you are, what day it is, and if you really were soaring through the heavens in the underbelly of a blimp. Well, in the hypnopompic state, it's possible to be sufficiently aware of the real world to, say, answer the phone, but it would probably be a confused and nonsensical conversation. Hypnopomp typically lasts only minutes. Minutes. Not several months. End of prologue. My daughter's early September morning phone call was as if in secret code. I replaced the receiver with exaggerated slowness, my waking brain wishing for a sound recorder's noise cut feature to reduce the ambient din in my head and playback feature so I could listen to the message again, more clearly perhaps. My fingers walked around my bedside books to the alarm clock, aborting a redundant wake-up call. My feet walked around the bedside dog to the shower, stepping into the steam. Hot rain washed sleep sludge down the drain, leaving littered about the tub my daughter's cryptic, sodden words. Mom, I'm going to become hugely famous this morning. No, it has nothing to do with a journalism class assignment. No, I can't tell you anything more. Just listen to the radio and you'll understand everything. Or nothing. No enlightenment flowed through the kitchen counter radio while I ate breakfast, or the car radio during my commute, or the live streams on my office computer. It wouldn't be until that afternoon I'd come to realize my lack of understanding had little to do with my early morning sleep-drugged state. Not until her second call came, by which time her euphoric animation had morphed into terror. I raced to my daughter as fast as I could, but found her already on the Hindenburg. I grabbed on as the airship was lifting off, my terrifying, exhilarating journey into the void, far beyond the blue skies of normalcy, began. 6 calendar months, an epic later, the blimp deflated, and my feet once again touched terra firma. I landed amazingly gently, but nonetheless in a daze, as if I had rather crash-landed on my head. As the vertigo ebbed, my eyes adjusted, taking in what should have been the familiar. But looking is one thing, perceiving quite another. The machinery in a person's head that converts vision into perception was altered in my head during my trip on the blimp, irreversibly, I would gratefully learn. 6 months after the cryptic early morning phone call, abruptly and poignantly, I became aware of a way my perception of life had been altered by my experience as caregiver to my adult daughter as she navigated through the dark, chaotic world of mental illness and addiction. The new awareness blindsided an unsuspecting me as I was running along Main Street from my office late for a meeting, head bent against the February wind chill. I almost ran into the police officers, the guardians of a young man sitting cross-legged on the sidewalk, chin buried in his chest, arms handcuffed behind, rocking gently back and forth, rocking, rocking, rocking. I faltered. The tears that instantly blurred my eyes, I couldn't attribute to an icy wind blast. I'm not sure if it was because of the bulky files I was carrying, or that I thought I'd too be handcuffed, that I didn't follow through on my impulse to reach out and touch the shoulder of the closest officer and say, "Be kind to him. Be very, very kind to him. He is someone's son." Or perhaps it was because the scene was too raw. The former me, still in possession of my pre-Hindenburg sightedness, would have sidestepped around the sidewalk obstruction, somewhat annoyed, vaguely aware of the young offender. Why do these people do these things to themselves? The altered me hesitated in front of the hatless, gloveless boy man, his low-riding track pants meager insulation against the concrete's cold, his mumbling a mantra, unintelligible to those of us not in his world. There, in that moment, suddenly, the play button was pressed, and a video began behind my shut eyelids. The tears that had blurred now spilled over. I saw my daughter being chased, slammed up against the police car by 4 officers, cuffed, pushed down into the back seat, screaming, "Someone help me! I didn't do anything wrong! Please help me, please!" This MeTube video has had almost 2 million views, all mine, since it was posted on my heart such a short, long, long time ago. Returning to the afternoon of the second alarming call I'd received from my daughter, in this, the first of what I think of as my travel videos, I'm watching myself in my daughter's apartment after a 90-minute drive I'd been catapulted from my office mid-afternoon by her frantic call, warning of dire happenings, of grave danger to her, us. Under usual circumstances, the video would have captured familiar scenes of a mother and daughter in a typical student apartment, catching up on happenings since parting ways at the start of the fall term. a pan of the kitchen would show post-it notes on the fridge reminding of assignment due dates, unwashed dishes in the sink, textbooks and papers littering the table. In the bedroom, the camera would pick up the clothes not picked up for several days, the eclectic artwork thumbtacked to the walls of the overstuffed bulletin board. It may zoom in on last term's report card on the dresser, showing straight A's. Here Comes the Sun would be the video soundtrack. Instead, a video camera with mind zoom capability shows a mother's thoughts racing in sync with her heart, stumbling over themselves, futilely attempting to catch the meaning of her daughter's words. This video soundtrack is helter-skelter, and it's getting louder. Your sudden rise to fame? You're a superstar? You need to be anonymous? You've put your family in danger? Daughter, let's pull this scene back to normal. Isn't this a school day? Shouldn't you be in class? Say something I can understand, please. My denial is starting to lose its grip. The next Me Too travel video in the series shows us soaring on, my daughter riding atop the Hindenburg, an eye dangling from its underbelly. Was anyone steering this monstrous blimp? Where would it land? Would it land? Below, the familiar landscape was dropping rapidly away from me. Looking up, I could see nothing through the ship's opaqueness, not heaven's vault into which we were hurtling, not my daughter. She was there, I knew, on the topside. I could not see her, nor see what she saw. Unmetaphorically, my eyes took in the padded room, the chemically restrained, zombie-dyed girl lying on the mat, long disheveled hair curtaining her face devoid of expression, of its normal animated beauty. In the unreal, surreal days to come, sometimes her face would enliven with joy and a daughter's love, and then darken with fear and mistrust. They, the medical experts, used words like bipolar mania, psychosis, delusions. My daughter wrote inexhaustibly with her safe, dull pencil, filling blank sheets of her journals with words like enlightenment, godliness, mysticism, a new earth. The blimp soared into the black beyond the ether. I shook with cold fear in the darkness. My daughter, blissful in the sky with diamonds, saw the stars shine steadily because up there where she was, there is no atmosphere to distort their light. Without warning, the airship exploded into flames and plunged earthward. The heat was intense. My face burned. My blistered hands threatened to let go. I called out to warn my daughter. From atop, she couldn't hear my cries through the roar of the inferno. She didn't know the ship was on fire. This video scene, the airship soaring upward, then burning and falling, looped over and over as time carried on the way it does, no matter what. What was this video's repeating soundtrack? Yesterday? Help? Help! Is anyone out there? Does anyone care? Where are you? They did reach out to me, I know, the caring hands of friends and family, kind and gentle. But in the end, I was a mother alone on this journey, searching for a daughter somewhere in another dimension. My black sleeps, full of exhaustion, offered no room for reviving dreams. My awakes were engorged with daymares. Chaos was the new norm. Unknowing was all that was known. She and I traveled on, separate, strangers apart on a strange journey. Thanksgiving, my daughter's birthday, my birthday, Christmas, and New Year's Eve happened, according to the calendar. Then, almost imperceptibly, the blimp started its descent. It began deflating ever so gradually. I was able at last to catch glimpses of my daughter slowly settling towards my place beneath. Is that you, Mom? You won't believe what I've seen. We touched down, and we, my daughter and I, touched. Epilogue. It's said sleepers emerging from hypnopomp often wake confused, speaking nonsensically. I say sometimes sleepers wake enlightened. If in that September pre-dawn phone call, I had understood my daughter to be telling me she was going on a trip, extreme and perilous, beyond reality, for an unknown length of time, to an unknown destination, and if she had asked, did I want to go along with her as far as I could, knowing that the same me would never come back, what would I have said? Why she had to go, I don't know, she wouldn't say. But why I had to go, I know. The end. But certainly not the end. A new beginning. My daughter has her story to tell, which she's actually spoken of in an interview on this show. It's not mine for the telling, but suffice it to say, using her words, she rode an out-of-control roller coaster for years, a terrifying ride characterized by substance abuse, misdiagnoses of her mental illness, run-ins with the law, strained family relationships, bankruptcy, stints in detox and rehab, recovery and lapses. She did not like the thought of being on bipolar disorder medications every day for the rest of her life, so when feeling well thanks to the meds, she'd take herself off them, and the demons would reemerge. In times of lucidity, my daughter recognized she was very quickly losing her grip with reality and didn't know what was happening to her. Using words borrowed from a presentation she made, my daughter said, I truly believed that I was going to become famous, that I was being spiritually reborn as a mystic or a prophet. Some days I believed I was God. I believed that I could communicate with telepathy and that the government was reading my thoughts and using me for intelligence purposes. I felt like I was in danger and that government agents would come to take me away at any moment. But because of the mania, I felt blissfully happy most of the time, and I couldn't understand why people were so worried about me. However, with each day, my grip on reality was slipping even more. That's when I called my mom in despair. And that's where my story, Touched, picks up, covering a span of about 6 months after my daughter came home to live with me. It was probably the most difficult period of my life. I say that recognizing my experiences were but a shadow of my daughter's horrifying, out-of-control roller coaster ride for years. My pain was different than her pain. It was a mother's pain of losing a child. I was still seeing the physical shell of my daughter, but it was as if her person had been hijacked by an alien whose language I could not understand, as the alien tried over and over and over and over again, day and night, to get me to see the world as she experienced it in her manic, psychotic, paranoid, or delusional states. It was most painful when, in moments of lucidity, my daughter overpowered the alien and looked at me out of her own eyes and tearfully pleaded, Mom, I need help. And then a moment later was gone again. It was a mother's pain of seeing her daughter inside a burning building and being helpless to rescue her. It was a mother's pain of witnessing her child in so much agony and self-destruction. It was a mother's pain of sending her child elsewhere to stay temporarily so she, mother, could steady herself, knowing the next elsewhere after that would be out on the street. It was the fearful pain of not understanding mental illness, of not knowing how long before things would return to normal. Would things ever return to normal? Would my beautiful, brilliant, loving daughter come back? It was the pain of mental, emotional, and spiritual fatigue, the pain of constant chaos. It was pain that threatened to push me under if I didn't do something to save myself. If I didn't save myself, there's no way I could be of support to my daughter in her darkness. So that's the pain I mentioned at the beginning of this show. However, I'd also said I was 100% grateful that this experience happened. Not that I'm a masochist, but as I also mentioned, the experience enriched my life. The enrichment came, among other ways, in the way of a broader life perspective, more robust personal boundaries, and a much expanded comfort zone. This enrichment may have organically, eventually happened, courtesy of, shall I say, less extreme life experiences over time, but in this do-or-die circumstance, I didn't have the luxury of time. These are the primary enlightenments I am grateful for having fast-tracked me towards a better version of myself. Regarding a broader life perspective, what I mean is that after sharing time and space with someone with an extremely divergent life perspective, aka reality, I now better understand how there is not one singular reality that's shared with others. My reality is my own. How I perceive and respond to sensory inputs is entirely the product of my nature and nurturing, my DNA and my life experiences, which is unlike anyone else's. You and I can look at the same thing, but our perceptions of it will vary, perhaps subtly or significantly. This understanding has enabled me to get much better at letting go of judgment of others, be it their beliefs, thoughts, or behaviors, whether or not I agree with them. My daughter's reality, when she was under the influence of chemicals gone haywire in her brain, even in that extreme case, her reality was as real and valid and compelling to her as mine was to me. When I came to understand this, it relieved me of the exhausting challenge of trying to constantly convince her that her version of reality was wrong. And this I'm working on applying in my day-to-day life with whomever I interact. I truly believe that that awareness, in one example, has helped me to be an age-appropriate mother to all four of my adult children. Not perfect, they'd readily agree, but better. It's not to say I forfeit my life perspectives in favor of others' views, only that I can more comfortably coexist in a world of variable realities. And to ensure that comfort, it's crucial, I also desperately learned, to create and maintain healthy personal boundaries. For many years, being a people pleaser, being unconfident about my likability, being an avoider of conflict, made me being a good boundary setter very difficult, if not impossible. By firmly taking a stance, I didn't want to displease people. I didn't want people to dislike me. I didn't want to argue with people. But those wants I had to override if I was to ensure good self-care while being a care provider to my daughter during her illness. Sleep deprivation, chaos, unrelenting, irrational demands pushed me to the brink. Furthermore, I knew if I truly wanted to help my daughter, being a softie and repeatedly giving in order to avoid conflict and ensure her affection was not going to help her or me. I had to practice what I'd preached about always putting on your own oxygen mask first in an emergency situation on a plane before trying to help someone else with their mask. It took me a while, but desperation forced me to stand firm. If my daughter didn't abide by my house rules, if she didn't agree to the living arrangement conditions I put in writing, she would have to move out. If she didn't like me for the boundaries I was setting, then so be it. This was an act of liking myself. Brené Brown, researcher, author, and motivational speaker, said, "Daring to set boundaries is about having the courage to love ourselves even when we risk disappointing others." As scary as it was for me to firmly ensure my own physical, mental, and emotional well-being were prioritized, it took a huge burden off me, and it had the opposite effect of what I was so worried about. By eliminating the ambiguity concerning what I would and would not permit, it actually eliminated a good deal of tension in our mother-daughter relationship. This act of boundary setting empowered me to more effectively set future boundaries in other personal relationships. It helped me stay strong and not get pulled into other people's circuses, not let other people's monkeys on my back. That is a reason to be grateful, for sure. And the third main reason for my gratitude for having the opportunity of being a caregiver to my daughter during her mental health crisis and journey through addiction is, as I said earlier, for the expanding of my comfort zone. Being able to more comfortably coexist with others holding differing perspectives, being able to more comfortably set healthy boundaries are actually two examples already given of my expanded comfort zone, but there are more. I'm now more comfortable with letting go of how I think life should unfold, and instead embrace how it actually unfolds and mine the riches that are offered in the unanticipated unfolding. I am now more comfortable, i.e. less scared, to try new things. Having gotten through this caregiver challenge that actually proved positively life-altering, I now feel inspired to take on adventures the pre-Hindenburg me might otherwise have remained too cautious to try. For example, a while back, I courageously signed up for and very much enjoyed improv training, further expanding my comfort zone as I repeatedly acted the fool on stage in front of other improv students and audiences. I'm now more comfortable in the realization that everyone exists somewhere on the spectrum of mental wellness, no differently than existing somewhere on the spectrum of physical wellness. And I know from seeing it firsthand that our place on the mental wellness spectrum isn't fixed. We have days or periods in our life when we're at the top of our game, and other times when the best we can do is put one foot in front of the other. With my eyes opened wider, I was better able as a workplace leader to recognize and accommodate this in both myself, my staff, and my peers. Same with family members. My frantic research into various mental health illnesses and addiction in my attempts to make sense of what I was experiencing with my daughter enabled me to see that handcuffed young man rocking on the sidewalk outside of my office as a respect-deserving person experiencing an illness. My unwavering love of my daughter during her crisis enabled me to see him as someone's son. There are more examples of my fast-tracked personal growth attributable to this uninvited major life experience with my daughter, but my chat time is coming to a close. I'll conclude by saying again, I sometimes wonder if this dramatic life situation hadn't presented, would I be the person I am today? Would that learning, awareness development have happened anyway? Perhaps more slowly and in smaller increments? I'll never know. I do know my daughter speaks openly about her journey through mental illness and addiction, how the experience left her with a wealth of understanding about the journey, how she feels grateful for being able to share her experiences to assist others in similar life circumstances. She knows as well as anyone can that recovery is never a straight climb out and up from the darkness. It's characterized by lapses, falling down, picking yourself up, and being stronger and more determined because of each fall, as it is with life in general. She's shared how coming to love herself was pivotal to her staying the recovery course, how bringing her daughter into the world and her love for her child strengthened her resolve. That is our shared experience. My resolve to be the best caregiver to my daughter during her crisis necessitated me loving myself first, putting my oxygen mask on first in order to lovingly help her put on hers. It's that very same self-love that's crucial to the BU journey, to becoming increasingly un-F-withable. Whether that self-love evolves and grows gradually, incrementally over time, or is fast-tracked via do-or-die life experiences, it doesn't matter. All that matters is that you're moving towards greater self-love. This has been a pretty heavy chat, and to keep that all-so-important life balance, I intend to lighten matters up next time. I'm going to talk about how life is a game. I invite you to tune in to the next episode of Better Me, Better World. I'll be back same time next week, same place here at CFRU 93.3 FM or CFRU.ca. The shows are recorded, so alternatively, have a listen when it works best for you. Until next time, be you. I'm Annie Gigg.